State Senator Alana DiMario. Welcome to the Publix Radio.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Let's start with the news this week that Matt Brown is making another run for governor of Rhode Island as a Democrat. He is running as part of a ticket with one of your colleagues, East Providence State Senator Cynthia Mendez. And they say they're leading a slate of 50 candidates next year who want to stage a progressive takeover of state government. Do you support that idea of progressive takeover of state government as someone yourself who identifies as a progressive?
You know, I am kind of predisposed to have some red flags raised whenever there is any type of absolute language used or language of extremes used. You know, whether I agree, you know, with somebody's goals philosophically or not, you know, the idea of a, you know, a progressive takeover, again, just kind of makes me feel like, you know, is that actually representative of the communities that these candidates are running in? Is that reflective of the, you know, the needs that their constituents are kind of passing up to them? And so, you know, I believe, I think a little bit more in kind of a bottom up approach to legislating, where, you know, policy and direction and you know, refining policy is really going to be dictated by the people that I'm supposed to be representing. Presenting and not kind of a predisposed set of very kind of strict ideals. And so, it definitely kind of it raises those alarm bells for me about like that extreme language.
To follow up on what you're saying, we've seen how in recent election cycles, there's been more energy on the progressive side of the aisle in Rhode Island. There are a number of progressive groups that have emerged. You've attracted support from one of those groups, the Rhode Island Working Families Party. But I wonder, with this proliferation of progressive groups and progressive campaigns, are you concerned that this will set back the progressive cause rather than leading to more progress on some of the shared goals that progressives have?
Yeah, I think that, you know, of course has to be a concern. I am a person who is, well, actually, let me back up for a second. I think that everybody who does this work has a different relationship with this work. And so it's really not up to me to kind of tell another person how they should or shouldn't be approaching this work or how they should be strategizing to try to get to an end. Of course, though, you know, that being said, I do have concerns about, you know, the idea of if there's not enough kind of shared momentum, if there aren't enough shared goals, it's really hard to get things across the finish line. It's really hard to do things that ultimately have an impact on people's lives in a real way. And I think that if there's not enough consensus around some of them, I think we do run the risk of losing momentum on some of those things and on not having those real world impacts that I am motivated to try to see.
Matt Brown's group, the Rhode Island Political Cooperative, has focused their efforts on the Rhode Island Senate because it's the smaller of Rhode Island's two legislative chambers with 38 members compared to 75 in the House. So the opportunity to make a bigger impact is there. The three senior members of your chamber have been there for a long time. Do you think we're likely to see some significant changes in the composition of the Senate and its leadership after elections next year?
I think that there is a long time between now and November 2022. As somebody who is a newer member myself, of course, you know, I think that it is important for people to bring fresh perspectives and initiate different conversations that then lead to different types of outcomes in the chamber. But, you know, I think that there's also the issue of it's going to be a midterm election year. It's not a presidential year. You know, that might influence the types of voters that turn out. There are a lot of things that are motivated by current issues in the news that then groups coalesce around and feel the need to take immediate action on. And I think that can influence outcomes as well. I think that it is important to balance out that idea of wanting to have those fresh perspectives, but also recognizing the value of the good and kind of long-term work that a lot of people in the Senate have been doing and making sure that their momentum is not lost either.
As you say, Senator DiMaio, we're a little less than a year away from the primary elections that will be very important next year in shaping the future of the General Assembly. As we speak here today, what kind of difference do you think elections next year will make in the kind of policy that comes out of the Senate and the legislature in general?
That's a really great question. I mean, I think that kind of unbelievably, I think COVID recovery is still going to be informing a lot of policy positions and a lot of the work that needs to be done. I think back in November 2020, I think we all were hoping that we would be well on the other side of this by now. And, you know, I think that it is still really impacting people in real ways in terms of people who are experiencing difficulty finding and maintaining housing, you know, people who are still experiencing huge changes in their job industries and in their ability to find work that matches their experience and their needs. And so I think that we're still going to be dealing with that next year. I definitely think that's going to have an impact. I think, you know, there is an increased consensus around the need to take action around environmental issues. I think that is going to be, you know, again, a huge prominent issue. You know, and then I think there are also some issues around expanding healthcare access and things like that. Again, I think people who have been experiencing interruptions with their employment are experiencing issues with healthcare in a different way. And so I think that all of those things that are informed by that experience that we're all having right now are going to have an impact next year.
And to close out our discussion of the state Senate, I have to ask you about Senate President Dominic Ruggiero. It looks like he's gearing up to run for re-election to his Senate seat next year. If he wins re-election as a senator, will you support him for another term as president?
Yeah, so I think that, you know, that's a question that a lot of people pay attention to. And, you know, I will say that when I first won in November, during the caucus, which came 2 days after the election, I abstained from voting for both the majority leader and the Senate president. And my reasons for that were that I didn't know them yet. I didn't know kind of what, as a new legislator, as a new person who had barely met half the people in that room, I didn't yet have a sense of how President Ruggiero, how, you know, the majority leader would be able to work to try to hold together, you know, this very diverse caucus that we have. And I didn't know what their priorities were. And so, you know, I think that now, one session in at this point, you know, I was very pleased with the priorities that they laid out at the beginning of the session. I have been impressed with the way that they have been able to get consensus on a number of issues that we've been able to get across the finish line in the Senate. And, you know, even on issues where, you know, I think ideologically or philosophically, I disagree maybe with leadership, I think that they are open to listening and they're open to being able to understand things from a different perspective. And I have a lot of respect for that. So, you know, that's not a definitive answer, but I think that I just want to be clear that, you know, it's not necessarily about finding somebody who ideologically is a complete match to you. It's also about recognizing that not everybody in that room is going to be exactly where you're at on something. And you want somebody who's going to be effective in again, kind of holding that diverse coalition together.
So it sounds like you're open to supporting Dominic Ruggiero for another term as president if it comes to that.
If it comes to that, and if he decides to take on that responsibility again.
You're a supporter of reproductive rights, and that played a role in your decision to run for the state Senate. Why do you think Democrats nationally have not done a better job in defending abortion rights, where we now see the other side of the issue is advancing their side in states like Texas?
Well, you know, I think that too many people didn't take that threat seriously enough. I think that, you know, in terms of elected officials, whether we're talking about at the state level in Rhode Island or nationally, I think that too many people thought that there were too many fail-safes in place, that, you know, there wasn't actually going to be an attack on these rights or an erosion, that the status quo would be maintained. And so they didn't feel the need to take on what they felt maybe was a more controversial stance or push for that as one of their priorities. I do think that what is happening in Texas right now has highlighted how vulnerable those rights are. And I think that it is spurring a number of people, my own congressman, for example, Jim Langevin, to rethink their position on something and to come out more strongly in support of having, you know, more codified protections into law. And so I'm very pleased to see that. And I really think it needs to continue until, you know, this doesn't have to be a fight that we have to keep having over and over again.
You first won election last year in 2020, and I believe that was when the Senate first became equally divided between men and women. From your perspective, what difference has that made in terms of the policy and dynamic of the chamber?
You know, a lot of observers have said that this was one of the most productive sessions that the Senate has ever had, so I will share that observation in response to your question. But, you know, I think, and I certainly don't want to cast any aspersions on my male colleagues who are, you know, work really hard on the issues that they care about. But I do think that, one, there are different voices in the room. Again, you know, I think that sometimes there's this perception that the General Assembly or the Senate or Senate leadership has maybe been opposed to something, where in reality, it's just maybe been a blind spot. And I think that the women in the chamber have really brought a number of issues kind of more to the forefront. So those conversations are different, which then leads to different things getting done. And in addition, I think we're workers, you know, like the thing that I have seen about, you know, a lot of my female colleagues, especially, is we dig in, we get the work done. We're detail oriented. We, you know, cross all our T's and dot all our I's. And that really makes all the difference in actually being able to be productive and get things done.
Finally, when you ran for election in 2020, you sent a letter to voters saying that you were running in part to challenge politics as usual, try and take on the Noah guy culture at the State House and foster a legislature characterized by lawmakers working diligently in the service of their constituents. What have you done to follow up on that?
Ooh, wow. Hold me to account. I like that. Thank you. So, you know, I think that one of the things that I have really tried to do is to make processes more transparent to people when I'm talking to them about things. So when I have constituents who have a concern, you know, I try to explain what the process might be to try to get their concern addressed. I want to bring as many people kind of into that process as I can. So I think, you know, the transparency part, I think, is an important one. I also think that in terms of the first part of what you said, I want to be able to talk about politics in a different way. You know, so I started off by kind of talking about how that black and white language, you know, whether you're way over on the right and you're talking about people being in, you know, an enemy of freedom, or you're way over on the left and, you know, you're saying that somebody doesn't care about something if, you know, they don't do things exactly the way that you want to. I think that that really does people a disservice in terms of their ability to engage with politics and to be able to understand how their voices are important in making change. And so, you know, I think just in the way that I've tried to communicate with, you know, whether it's an advocate, whether it's a constituent, whether it's my colleagues, you know, I want to try to bring a more honest and balanced representation of how that process actually goes. Because when you're talking about things in terms of good or evil, or if this is all right or this is all wrong, you're not really being an honest broker of information. And so I think that's one thing that I've really tried to do as I've been learning this process myself also. Part of that is also, you know, recognizing and really building on and highlighting the good work that other people have done. One of the things I've also tried to do as I've gotten to know this role is get to know my colleagues and get to know the good work that they are trying to do and highlight that and try to, again, make that more transparent to people.
We're out of time. Thank you for joining us, State Senator Alana DiMario of Narragansett, a Democrat who also represents part of North Kingstown.
Thanks so much.
As usual, you can find a lot more on our website at thepublicsradio.org. I'm Ian Donis.